Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today we're going to talk about the SAVE plan and whether or not it is toast. This is me predicting. This is not something that's actually happened yet. I'm going to talk about what's going on with all the SAVE plan lawsuits. I'm going to talk about kind of my hot takes on a lot of these different lawsuits, and I'm going to talk about what it means for borrowers, what it means for you. There's a lot that's been going on the past several weeks, and I wanted to take time to digest it. I was on a little bit of a vacation overseas visiting my wife's family and glad to be back, had a good time, but also want to dive into all these major updates that affect borrowers. If you've been following things, specifically the Missouri and Kansas lawsuits are really what's driving all this with the SAVE plan lawsuits. There's really two separate lawsuits going on. One of them is the traditional MOHELA type argument, where you're saying, you know, the state attorneys general, rather, these Republican-led states are saying, hey, MOHELA is losing borrowers, therefore this is illegal, therefore you have to scrap the whole SAVE plan. And a separate lawsuit is being brought by Kansas attorney general, basically, with a bunch of other states, basically saying, hey, we are losing FFEL loans from this forced consolidation that's happening because of the SAVE plan. People are signing up for it and we're losing interest income. That's hurting us. Therefore, SAVE plan is illegal. So there's two different lines of attack, and it's like well over a dozen state attorneys general, all from Republican-led states that are involved in this. And that's a big deal. That's something that's really threatening the very existence of the SAVE plan legally. And it's really, I think, the SAVE plan is in dire danger of disappearing, regardless of whether or not Biden wins re-election or if it's somebody else besides Biden, another Democrat wins election. And of course, I think it's definitely toast if Trump wins the election. So talking through what exactly do these lawsuits mean? Why are they posing a risk to the SAVE plan? Why now? What's going on? So some of this stuff has been covered, but I want to go into sort of my hot take on it because hopefully you'll enjoy it. So the first one, the Missouri case, there was an injunction against any further forgiveness in the SAVE plan, and this one was really shocking. Both of these judges, by the way, in both the Missouri and the Kansas lawsuits, were both appointed by President Obama. So these are not right-wing judges, right? These are not people that you would be able to easily attack as partisans. That's one of the reasons why these rulings were a little shocking. So the Missouri ruling was that there needs to be an injunction of stopping any more forgiveness coming from the SAVE plan. This lawsuit was concerning because it basically looked at the ICR statute that caused repay and pay to get created, and it was doubting whether or not Congress allowed forgiveness under that statute at all, which that's really concerning if you're on the repay plan or the pay plan, and now that ICR statute is, they're saying, well, maybe forgiveness isn't even allowed under the statute, which a lot of Republican-leaning people in student loan policy were on Twitter after that, and they were like, Congress definitely envisioned forgiveness happening, so that's kind of crazy. That's definitely out of left field. That doesn't make any sense. So would I worry about whether or not I could get forgiveness under something like the pay plan based off of this lawsuit? No, I wouldn't be worried. I'll explain why. But it's showing that the SAVE plan is in dire straits. And again, you know, this judge stopping any further forgiveness, basically this judge is saying, well, MOHELA is losing borrowers because of this. No, you can't continue to forgive loans under the SAVE plan anymore while we resolve this. So does this affect PSLF? No, I don't think it does. I don't think this affects PSLF. I think it just affects people getting forgiveness under the 10 to 25 year private sector version of SAVE for now. What's interesting about these rulings, right, is they're not actually rulings. They're just initial injunctions stopping the administration from doing anything else. So this, we're still going to see more stuff happen after, you know, these judges actually rule, and then those rulings will get appealed. This is the Missouri judge. The Missouri judge is essentially saying, hey, you can't do cancellation under the SAVE plan. I got to think about this. The Kansas ruling was a little bit different. The Kansas ruling was first saying, well, there's only three states that made a credible argument that their interests are actually harmed. So three states have standing, not all of them. But that Kansas judge still said, well, you know, the parts about having 5% of your income instead of 10 for undergrad loans, that's not legal. You know, the part where you can forgive loans after 10 years instead of 20 years, that's not legal. So we're going to put an injunction on that and stop the administration from moving forward implementing that part of the SAVE plan. But that judge also said, well, why did the people suing allow all the other stuff about SAVE to go through? The stuff about the interest subsidy, the stuff about the 225% of the poverty line. They didn't seem to care about that, and that was in place for a long time, so we're not going to touch that part. Again, this is an interesting ruling because what this judge is basically saying is, well, I'm skeptical to stop the parts of the save plan that have already been implemented because it seems like these opponents didn't really care that much about it. So that was kind of the ruling there. Now, obviously, the people suing for this, they're not content stopping at a lower court or even a court of appeals. The people suing over this are definitely wanting to bring this all the way to the Supreme Court. That's really the end game here. Now, you might be confused because you might have heard another news story that came out that said, you know, hey, we're going to have a reversal of that injunction. So that's what happened with the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. The government appealed the ruling of the injunction, and the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals was like, hey, actually, this whole pause on the implementation of the rest of the SAVE plan, no, that's not correct. You can go ahead and implement it. Go ahead. Here's something that's really important to think about. You can kind of put me into the category of people that are cynical about the way that the courts rule on things like this, where there's like a clear sort of partisan tilt to it. I do think that justices and judges care about the law, of course, and I'm not necessarily saying that people are wrong. I'm not a judge. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not qualified to really probably have an opinion on this, but I'm going to share mine anyway, which is that the 10th Circuit has got 7 judges appointed by Democratic presidents, 5 judges appointed by Republican presidents. The 10th Circuit said, no, this injunction's not correct. You can go ahead and continue to implement the SAVE plan, right? But the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, this is the one that covers the Missouri case. And the 8th Circuit has got 10 judges appointed by Republican presidents and 1 appointed by Democratic president. There's a reason that these lawsuits get filed in the Missouri court because they know it's going to get appealed through the 8th Circuit, which is super conservative, where you essentially are a lot more likely to get a favorable ruling if you're a Republican-leaning plaintiff if you file in Missouri and then appeal it to the 8th Circuit, and then you've got a conservative majority Supreme Court that you can appeal it to after that. The Biden administration, what did they do in the face of these rulings? Well, they, like most things with student loans, listened to progressive groups on what to do next. And the progressive groups are very smart about how they sell it, but essentially they said that Biden needs to freeze the student loan system in response to these rulings. And what they simply did is put everybody into an administrative forbearance. Now, if you weren't paying attention on the major rewrite of the student loan rules the Biden administration did, one of the things they slipped in there was that you can do an administrative forbearance and count it for forgiveness. And they have taken incredible liberties with this administrative forbearance usage, and they're trying to make it seem like this only helps a small group of people when 8 million people are on the SAVE plan, 4.5 million of them qualify for a $0 payment, a lot of people who haven't had to recertify their incomes in many years, right? And then 3 million or so actually have a payment to be made, and they were trying to sell this as being, well, only the 3.5 million or so that have a payment to make on the SAVE plan are going to have it paused, and therefore it's pretty narrow, right? All this stuff is very strategic by the Biden administration on trying to make things look like they're cheaper than they are. And, to be fair, 8 million out of 42 million borrowers, that's a lot smaller group than freezing student, payments and interest on everybody, right? So it is a smaller group. And you might say, well, shoot, I'm on the pay plan, I'm making payments, my interest is not paused, like, should I just switch over to the SAVE plan? And I would not do that. I would not do that because the pay plan might survive this lawsuit, and we don't know that the SAVE plan is going to be sticking around. And if you switch off this pay plan, you can never get back onto it. And that's specifically for folks that are in this, borrowed their first loan between October 2007 and July 2014. Those are the folks in that pay plan. What is going to happen is, regardless of which way these courts rule, it's going to get appealed to the Supreme Court. And it's probably going to get appealed to the Supreme Court before the election. The Supreme Court term lasts October to June every year, right? Or, I think oral arguments wrap up in April. So you're going to get this case sent to the Supreme Court fairly quickly. And it's probably going to be appealed and heard, I would assume, before the end of the year, before whoever wins the election would be sworn in for their second term or first term or whatever. And how would the Supreme Court be likely to rule on this? Why is this SAVE plan lawsuits, why is this such a big deal? Well, cancellation was supposed to go through, and that was going to cost $400 billion, and the administration said that the SAVE plan, therefore, was going to cost, $100-something billion. But the problem with that is with the cancellation, when the cancellation didn't go through, the SAVE plan's estimate of costs is more like $400 billion. So effectively, the SAVE plan looks almost identical to the cost of cancellation, which the Supreme Court said was way too big and way too generous, that Congress never allowed that through the HEROES Act, which is what that lawsuit was all about. Now, they've never had a lawsuit where they've had to rule on the Higher Education Act and what Congress meant by that. You'll recall that one of the reasons they used the HEROES Act was to not have a ruling made on the Higher Education Act. I think they intentionally went through with the HEROES Act because they were trying to, with the cancellation case, they're trying to dodge the Supreme Court saying they couldn't do stuff with the Higher Education Act because they wanted to protect that and have that Supreme Court not rule directly on that. But we are heading for a showdown about what the Higher Education Act means with a 6-3 conservative majority Supreme Court. And Republicans very much want this court to rule on what the Higher Education Act means to tie the hands of future Democratic administrations. And that's really what's going on, is the SAVE plan, they want to get this in front of this court ASAP. You know, even if Trump were to win the election, you know, the Supreme Court probably would have already heard this case, and so they would probably make a ruling, I would assume. Or if there's a lower court ruling, like the Eighth Circuit makes a super conservative ruling, they could just, the government might just say, well, we'll just let that stand and not appeal it, or something like that. Now, why do I think the Supreme Court is probably going to throw out the SAVE plan eventually when they get to it? The Supreme Court has this operating belief that, you know, executive authority is a lot more limited than it should be on things like financial decisions that have big costs associated with them. So there's a big skepticism from this Supreme Court about the executive branch getting to make free-willing decisions on big regulations that Congress didn't explicitly authorize. So one of the kind of famous quips is like, there, you know, Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes. That's very much in line with the way this court thinks. And when the Supreme Court hears that, hey, this SAVE plan, you know, the cost estimate was, you know, by the administration was like 100 something billion, but then cancellation didn't go through because the court said it was illegal. And so then this plan is actually going to cost like 400 something billion. They're going to hear that and they're going to say, administration's clearly trying to get around us. And they're going to come down pretty hard, I think, in some point in the next few months, saying, hey, you know, they didn't authorize this. This isn't okay. And what I'm concerned about, if I'm transparent here, is that the ICR statute that authorizes things like the repay and the pay and the SAVE plan, it all comes down to what does the Supreme Court say about that statute? Because there's two different statutes for income-driven repayment. There's the statute that is the IBR statute, where Congress in the Obama era, when they had a supermajority in the Senate, or you know, they had 60 votes in the Senate, they passed the ACA and everything, they defined the IBR plan as 15% of income, 150% of the poverty line, 25 years till forgiveness if you took out your first loan before July 2014. And if you took out your first loan after July 2014, it's 10% of your income, 150% of the poverty line, 20 years until forgiveness. That's what income-based repayment is. That's a defined plan. That's not something that Congress can change unless they have 60 votes in the Senate. But the ICR statute is how President Obama and President Biden have done everything on student loans, basically, where the ICR statute says that you have to have a plan that is no longer than 25 years, that is no more than 20% of income or something like that. And so the Democratic administrations have effectively said, well, that means that we can do whatever we want. That means we can do something that's 10 to 20 years for undergrad loans, 25 years for grad. It means we can do filing separately for everybody. It means we can do higher poverty line threshold. Right. And so the real concern here is that the Supreme Court rules on the ICR statute and says, like that Missouri judge did, hey, maybe Congress never even intended forgiveness on this at all. Now, I don't think they're going to do that. I think that what's going to happen is they're going to come out and they're going to say, clearly, both sides were cool with the repay plan. Both sides were cool with the pay plan. You know, we'll let the status quo that existed from before COVID stand because the projected costs on those plans were modest. But the SAVE plan is completely out of left field, way too expensive. We're going to strike that down. So I think that that's what's going to happen. They like to try to say that they make narrow rulings. So I think that what they could simply do is just say, hey, the SAVE plan is not legal. It's too far. It's too much. And then depending on what that ruling is, you know, I think that if Biden or the Democrats win re-election, by the way, I'm recording this, obviously, the President Biden had a poor debate showing. Who knows exactly what's going to happen on who's going to be the Democratic nominee, right? But, you know, let's say it's Biden. As I was recording this, you know, they'll try to make a different income-driven plan if they don't completely strike down the ability for them to make new income-driven plans under the ICR statute. So they would probably have to go through a new negotiated rulemaking process. They'd have to go through and essentially, you know, redo the rule and make it something that would align with the court ruling. You know, alternatively, if the Supreme Court comes down really hard on the ICR statute, then they wouldn't be able to do much of anything. So this is what's really so up in the air. Now, here's a word of comfort here. If you're on the pay plan, I don't think you'll have issues. I don't think that they would throw out the pay plan just because it's been around for quite a long time. Now, you know, in terms of the save plan, an easy way to reverse the save plan is just to revert it all back to repay and essentially say, you know, Congress felt fine letting people come up with plans that had a modest cost. I think the repay plan had a projected cost of something like under $20 billion, which is significant money, but it's not huge. It's not massive, right? It doesn't fit the, if it's over $100 billion, Republicans care. If it's under $100 billion on student loans, they don't care kind of rule that seems to exist with student loan land. I do think that what we're going to see, if I had to predict right now, is Supreme Court hearing a case before the end of the year on the SAVE plan, probably appealed through the Eighth Circuit, through the Missouri case where Mohila, is getting screwed over and as argued by the state attorneys general, right? About them losing borrowers, which impacts the state of Missouri's revenue. And you just find that they have standing, right? And you get to the merits. And the merits are SAVE plan, $400 billion. Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes, illegal. And then the question is how does the court reverse the SAVE plan? I think the easiest way to do it is just to say, well, the repay plan was fine, the pay plan's fine, but SAVE plan is too generous, and we're not going to make a narrow ruling on exactly what that means, exactly how generous is too generous. So we're just going to say SAVE plan can't do it, go figure out something else. Now, depending on who wins the election, right, if Democrats win the White House, then you'll see continuance of this hardship rule. And what's clear is in the ruling the Kansas judge made, the Kansas judge was like, why didn't y'all sue about this faster? Maybe some of this would have been illegal, but it's already been implemented. So I don't think you really can make an argument after the fact that it's illegal because you didn't try harder earlier. So Republicans are being told, hey, sue immediately. If you have a problem with something that Congress, you know, that the White House doesn't, student loans, you need to sue right away. And so when they're doing cancellation plan B right now, right, which is to come up with over a dozen different reasons that somebody could claim a hardship and then petition to have all their loans discharged. And it's another way to try to get a lot of cancellation for people. Republicans are going to sue under the same Mohila strategy because it's already been proven to work with these courts, right? They're going to sue again when that comes out, whenever that rule comes out, probably before the election, and they're going to try to stop that. And so you're essentially having borrowers just totally caught in the middle, having no idea what to do. And it's really frustrating for everybody, right? It's frustrating for you as a borrower. It's frustrating for us giving advice. The one thing I can say, though, is if you know the loopholes, if you know what the rules say, if you know what it all actually means, right? If you look under the hood, you can still save a lot of money with this. So people on the SAVE plan, yeah, it stinks that this plan could get thrown out for sure. But if you think about when you borrowed student loans, let's say it was before the pandemic, you borrowed them, you probably weren't anticipating the SAVE plan. You probably weren't anticipating the student loan pause. And with the SAVE plan, maybe let's say it takes until sometime in very early 2025 before there's a ruling on this. If you're on the SAVE plan, if you get an extra, you know, 6 months of student loan pause when it was already 3.5 years, and you're effectively getting 4 years worth of paused interest and payments total, even if you get reverted back onto the repay plan or the pay plan or the IBR plan, you know, the reality is if the rules incentivize you to go for forgiveness, you should go for forgiveness. If the rules change and you're making enough money to justify paying off your loans, you know, and then you need to pay off your loans instead, then you just got to do what the rules say. Now, I want to think about this in terms of taxes. By definition, you know, unless you've already spent the money, if you have a higher tax rate, you essentially just have to pay it. And it's a percent of your income. So by definition, it's affordable relative to what you're earning, unless, you know, it was like 80% of your income is being taxed or something crazy like that. So student loans, I think, is no different. Like, so if you have the SAVE plan or you've been on the pay plan for a while and you're in the private sector, you know, if you have debt that's larger than what you earn, you're a great forgiveness case. If you revert back to the old rules where it was repay and IBR and that kind of stuff, then you're probably more at like a 1.5 debt to income ratio or above. It makes sense to go for forgiveness. So, you know, in other words, if you have more than 150K of debt and you have 100K of income, then you'd be a good forgiveness case. Whereas if the SAVE plan's around, if you have 100K of debt or more in 100K of income, you'd be a good forgiveness case. So it would push some people to go for repayment instead of forgiveness if they toss the save plan. It would. But it's not necessarily earth-shattering. It would raise people's payments. But keep in mind that the first time people will have to recertify in a very long time for most people on IDR is in 2025. And that's going to happen regardless, I think, of who wins, because I don't think that they're going to push IDR recertification yet again in 2025 when you've got the election that just happened. It just doesn't make any sense that they would do that. Now, I do think, you know, if there's some sort of bad recession or something like that in the future, I do think that Democrats would try to come up with some sort of reason to do a pause again. I do think that would probably happen. Republicans wouldn't, unless we were going into an election, and then they probably would. What's clear is student loans, more than anything I've ever experienced, have become this like political hot potato, this extremely political thing. And under like our hyper-partisan, polarized sort of society, as the electorate has split more along the lines of educational levels, right, where, you know, your more educated people tend to vote for Democrats, and people with graduate degrees very disproportionately vote for Democrats, and people with, you know, that are working class, like, have increasingly more and more gone towards voting for Republicans, you know, student debt has become like a more polarized political issue, whereas in the past, it wasn't. And when you have something that's very polarized, you've got a lot more legal stuff going on. You've got a lot more lawsuits going on. You've got a lot more, you know, incentive for the party that has a lot of voters that are student loan borrowers to reward those borrowers when they're in power. And you've got a lot more incentives for the party that's out of power to not care about those folks when they're in power, right? So I do think that, you know, if you think about what happened with Trump 2016 to 2020, if he were to win, I don't think that they're going to ignore student loans like they did 2016 to 2020. I think they're going to try to reverse most of what Biden did. Now, I don't think they're going to reimpose loans. I don't think that they're going to do something like that. I think that wouldn't help them, and they wouldn't really care, to be honest. But I do think that they would hold a negotiating rulemaking session, and I do think that they would try to come up with their own IDR plan, depending on what the Supreme Court says. If the Supreme Court says, hey, that ICR statute is never intended to do what they're doing with it, you can't make plans based off of that statute like they've been doing, we're going to toss everything out. I think that's very unlikely they toss everything out. I think they just toss out the save plan. And if they do just toss out the save plan, then Republicans might try to block all the plans except for their new plan, and they might come up with a new plan themselves. And their new plan, the issue there is Congress does say, or the rules do say, no longer than 25 years. The Republicans' proposed IDR plan that they're trying to pass through legislation has no timeline attached to it. Their plan simply says, if you want forgiveness, you've got to pay the full amount that you borrowed plus whatever the interest would have been on a standard 10-year plan, even if that takes 50 years. Now, you know, because that's their idea, that wouldn't pass muster. They wouldn't be able to like put that plan forward because the ICR statute does say no longer than 25 years. So we're really heading into a wild period of time. If the Supreme Court comes down super hard on all this stuff, then effectively you're looking at the next 4 years, if it's under a Democratic president, of how can I get around the Supreme Court, and then everything gets appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court strikes it down, and then borrowers, I think, will end up with the pre-COVID situation. And if Republicans get power, they might try to do stuff that makes it a lot harder to get forgiveness around the edges. So what do I mean by that? Well, you know, remember that tax-free treatment of forgiveness for private sector forgiveness for borrowers, that expires in 2026. And the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Trump tax cuts from 2017, expire at the end of 2025, going into 2026. And so when you think about all those things that expire, you know, Republicans are, if they have to share power with Democrats, like Democrats win one of the houses of Congress, maybe there's some kind of trade that happens where some of those tax cuts get extended, some of them don't. Maybe borrowers keep that, you know, tax-free forgiveness. But Republicans are becoming a lot more aware of the student loan policies, right? And they understand that that tax-free forgiveness part of the law existing enabled President Biden to do all of these forgiveness things. And so they're not going to have very much incentive to allow that to continue. So that's kind of what I'm thinking is, I think that it's just going to be a big food fight over the save plan over the next few months. And then we're going to see a earth-shattering ruling that everybody on student loans pursuing forgiveness is going to need to pay attention to, because it's going to show just like what the Supreme Court says is actually legal. And that hasn't been tested basically in years. It's never been tested as to whether or not it's legal with all the stuff the executive branch has done on income-driven repayment. And so it's a big X factor. And so we're going to be following it. Now, there are a bunch of new changes to rules that you should know about. So things that I don't think are going to go away or change, you know, you do get a weighted average consolidation credit now, which is different. That didn't used to be the case. It used to wipe away your credit completely. But as of July 1, now you get weighted average credit when you consolidate. So one of the big things I'm thinking about that our consultations are going to help with is it's going to be completely impossible to know if you're getting the correct amount of credit towards forgiveness once Department of Education eventually releases a forgiveness tracker. So eventually they're supposed to do that, right? But think about this. If you did a consolidation, you're supposed to get whatever the oldest loan was credited to your full consolidated loan. And that's if you consolidated before July 1. Now, if you consolidate after July 1, past the IDR account adjustment window, then you're supposed to get the weighted average. But the weighted average should be affected too by whatever they did with the IDR account adjustment. So if you put in a bunch of different loans into your consolidation, you need to make sure that you've got the right amount of credit on all those individual loans so that when you consolidate it, the new final amount of credit you got towards forgiveness is correct. So how can a typical borrower figure that out? You won't figure it out. Most people won't be able to, because the NSLDS files are super confusing to look at. So in my view, like, one of the key values of a consultation going forward is just going to be knowing exactly how much credit you should have towards forgiveness. That's going to be a big deal going forward. Also, knowing what your plan A and plan B needs to be. Are you still a good candidate for forgiveness if the SAVE plan gets repealed? Like, what should be your plan B based off of what the law says about what IBR stuff you're eligible for if they, you know, axe the SAVE plan? If they were to axe everything under the pay, repay, SAVE plan, which is not likely, but if they were to try to do that through the Supreme Court, what would be your plan, right? Who should maybe think about paying back their loans? Who shouldn't? There's a lot of things that are on the table that can still save you money. Also, if you're just a recent grad, the typical stuff of consolidating right after graduation, knowing how to sign up for the right plan when, knowing when the SAVE plan is, you're locked into it, right? Versus when you're not locked into it, knowing about those rules matters. Knowing about filing separately versus jointly, you know, IBR is still going to be around that allows you to file separate or jointly regardless of what happens with the Supreme Court. So all this stuff is still super relevant. Knowing whether or not you need to amend prior year tax returns to get a bunch of money back as a refund. So there's still lots of ways where consults still help you. We're still helping people out. If you need help, you know, studentloanplanner.com/book, you can book a consult with our team. And I would love to hear questions that you've got with all this chaos. So if you wanted to ask any questions that we could feature on the podcast, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. If you want to go there, record your question, we'll feature it on a pod episode. Love to hear what you're thinking about with all this chaos with the Supreme Court, student loans, et cetera. So I just want to thank you very much for listening to this podcast. This is ultimately something that we do for you, and we want to make it as relevant for you as possible. One of the things that I'm thinking about is in future episodes, we might do something like Financially Free Fridays and feature a lot more of the wealth building stories in our community that we're seeing just through the work we're doing with our SLP Wealth Financial Planning Company. So that's kind of one of the ideas we have with this show, is to try to make like the format, you know, our traditional Tuesday episode that's more student loan specific. And then maybe on Fridays, do more of a fun like wealth building thing to just show the positivity of what happens when people build wealth with student loans and don't let the student loans hold them back from all their dreams that they have. Because that's what ultimately, that's why I get up in the day to do this, is so that you can live your best life, so we can just help people live their best lives and not let the student loans hold anyone back. That's really what gets me excited. And I think that, you know, to do that, I think it'd be kind of fun to feature a lot more of these success stories that we've seen from the years that we've been doing this. So that's just some of the thoughts. Would love to hear your comments by email too. If you want to email me, Travis@studentloanplanner.com. If you want to share what you'd like to see with the podcast, what kind of things that you'd be interested in. So just let us know. So studentloanplanner.com/book if you need a consult. And then if you want to ask a question to be featured on the podcast, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. Really appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening to Student Loan Planner Podcast.